Hi there, and thank you for joining me today on the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and today is episode number 219. Before I get into the episode, I just want to say, hey, thank you so much for being a part of this Lifetime Athlete community, and I'll just fill you in on a few of the things that I've been up to lately, or even right now. I happen to be standing here sipping some bone broth, delicious bone broth, which I make myself most of the time. This one happens to be a medley of beef bones and elk bones and actually a deer shank that was all roasted and then that was slow cooked for about 24 hours with some vegetables and spices. And it's very collagen rich and delicious. I actually popped a vitamin C along with that because I think there's enough research these days to support doing so. Helps us lifetime athletes, especially the aging ones like me, to repair tissues, especially tendons. And so I'm into that. I don't do it all the time, but definitely enjoy a few mugs per week with the supplementation. I'm also drinking a hot liquid because I'm standing barefoot on concrete. Now I'm down in the studio where I have a stand-up desk and a dedicated broadcast station where most of these podcast recordings happen if I'm not on the move. But a lot of times I'll stand barefoot. Now, if I'm going to be working all day, I have a mat and I might wear shoes, but I think there's also enough data to suggest that if we get a grounding effect by walking on the earth, that it can assist with our recovery processes and possibly reduction in inflammation as well. It's a little difficult for me to do that outside right now with the current temperature being about 17 degrees and most surfaces covered with snow and ice. I'm not sure it works as well, and I'm not that tough, but I can do this in the basement some. This is an uninsulated slab, so I'm on about 8 inches of gravel with 4 inches of concrete, and therefore I'm dealing with a high-density conductive surface. So we'll see what happens. I feel pretty good to start with, but who knows, maybe I'll start to feel amazing, which I'll take. And I think that's what we all deserve. That's what you deserve too. Got some interesting things going on in today's show. I'll tell you what it is. Don't want to keep you in suspense any longer. Today's a mailbag show, so I have a couple of questions or situations that I'm going to dive into. And then also, we're going to have a t-shirt giveaway. So lately, I've been really interacting a lot with clients on some great topics. And so these questions today, technically they are listener questions because most of our clients listen and read the content that comes out here at TLA. But specifically, these are some folks that are in the Lifetime Athlete Training Tribe. That's our online coaching platform year-round and nationwide based on the annual training plan. And those guys are working in the agility block right now and doing workouts of the week that are home gym based. But in addition to that, we have a couple subgroups in the tribe. We've got our body recomping club, which is in January called the Shed and Shred. So we're working on that, and I'm participating with the folks there. I could use a little bit of that myself. We also have the Running Demons, and we've got a number of tribe members who are avid runners, and they receive some additional running coaching in addition to the tribe programming. I'm also co-participating with them to the extent that I run these days. I like to run a little, but not a lot, and so I'm kind of in a rebuild mode for several reasons, and I don't even know if I'll get into those right now because there could be another show on the building and rebuilding of old Coach Jay-Z. Okay, so diving into that, I also want to mention I did get a couple queries as well from some of my coaching clients who are basically in a coaching subscription. And so we support those folks with a dynamic training program and a 24/7 connection. And so we're supporting our clients with Zoom meetings as well as phone, text, and email, and building that relationship for people that are really goal-driven. And so here's where things get interesting to me. And I think I'll leave one of these, or maybe even all of them, as just anonymous today. It doesn't really matter whether we use names or not. But this question came up. Is it better to sign up for an event, like an upcoming event that you put on your calendar, and now you've got this target to train for? Or is it better to wait until, you know, your training has really progressed and you're in the time when you're ready, most optimally ready, to do an event? And when I was posed this question, I thought about it briefly and I said, well, there is no right answer to this particular question. It just depends on what works best for the individual. There are some folks who really do well if they make that commitment and now they've got a hard goal and they can see it on the calendar, and it tends to increase their motivation to be consistent and go after their training and their honing of their fitness and performance capacity. But on the other hand, I've also seen this backfire a little bit because, you know, people get in the habit of signing up for things and sometimes they don't think it through fully, or their motivation is so high it overrides, you know, some of the introspective nature that maybe they should be applying. And so what happens is they'll sign up for something, but they're either signing up for something that's a little too big and a little too close as far as a timeline to fully get ready and enjoy it and perform well and maybe avoid injury, or they may sign up for it at a time when their life is in a bit of change, challenge, turmoil, chaos, whatever term you like. And so it gets very hard for them to hit the workouts, and they see the thing coming up and they're frustrated and they're worrying, and it actually creates a stressor. So this can go either way, as you can see. When you sign up for something and use it as a driver. Now, the other side of that is, what if you just take your training, and you know generically you've got key performance indicators and markers and metrics that you're trying to hit, and you, once you get to a point where, oh, okay, now I'm at this level that I want to be at, you know, maybe then you can sign up. Sometimes that's a challenge because events, you know, whether we're talking about an obstacle course race or powerlifting competition or a marathon, you name it, they fill up, and so we always have some gambles there. And again, there's no right or wrong answer, but if I was to say, well, what's my advice to anyone? I'd say, well, just double check if you're going to sign up for something that you do have a life that's not overly chaotic at the time, so you're going to be able to get your workouts in, and it's far enough out that you're not putting yourself at risk in doing it. And then if you like the training first kind of model, you know, you want to bring yourself into a time of readiness before you select the specific target event, but you also have to be aware that sometimes this has to be done slightly in advance as well. The only other option that is, it does work for some people, actually like myself included, is you just create your own event when you know you're ready. And you need venues, you need your own motivation, and you need some usually some folks to dive in with you. But that can be done, and that's another option there. So that's kind of an interesting thing about signing up for an event or not as a driver of fitness, or waiting till you have the readiness. Now, the next thing that comes up, this was really an interesting opportunity for me to talk about movement and physical therapy and training, because I had just finished up a masterclass meeting with our training tribe and was chatting with one of the members and participants. And basically, he posed to me this sort of scenario. He's like, well, you know, when you have like a tight muscle, and let's say it's a tight hamstring or a tight calf or something along those lines, well, a lot of times it doesn't feel right to stretch that tight tissue. And so should you actually stretch the adjacent structures or tissues to kind of offload or help this situation? And I thought, well, that's a great question, because that's high-level thinking, first of all, when you start to look at performance and movement analysis, and this guy is indeed a high-level thinker. And I said, well, you know, that might be something that we look at. And so if we said, well, first of all, when do you want to stretch a muscle, and how do we define, you know, let's say movement restriction, or sometimes what I will call tight versus taut. And so if I get into that very quickly, you know, a muscle that's undergoing adaptive shortening and it has truly lost some normal resting length, that's a truly tight muscle. And then applying stretching or other mobility enhancing interventions and exercises, it can be desirable. But if instead the muscle is more, let's say, taut or neurologically activated, so it's holding a resting level of tone in clenching, well, sometimes this is called protective guarding, or that holding pattern in the muscle. And we may not want to stretch it because, A, that muscle may be clenching to stabilize a body area and, you know, again, minimize force going into an injured area. So we want to examine for that. The other thing, though, is the muscle itself may be tight because it's directly injured, and so there may be some micro tearing or trauma in the tissue. And in that case, stretching may not be at least the initial intervention that we want to select. And so we were talking about that. Then we moved into, well, would you stretch the things around it, let's say, you know, to help the situation? And that can apply indeed when we have movement restriction and we can identify it and we see a movement pattern where, you know, the mobility of the segment or the limb or the whole body is just, it's subpar, suboptimal to the demands. So in that case, we'd say, yeah, let's try to stretch everything out that isn't mobile enough, because now we want to have the capacity, or at least the ability, to, you know, to access that range of motion, and that can help. But most of the time, things go a little bit deeper. At least they do in my mind, and some of the models that I'm developing, and also what I've learned from study and research and watching and listening thought leaders. So what I'll first of all look at is posture. I'll take a look at position, and I'll take a look at pattern. And so three P's, I guess that's kind of catchy, but I didn't have that plan as I started talking about it. Well, okay, let's use an example, and it'd be also the example that that I was talking about with this client. And let's say it's a hamstring. It's a hamstring issue, a hamstring that, again, we know it's something's not right. It feels a little tight. We're not sure entirely if the problem's directly in the muscle or if that muscle is, again, guarding. But when we start looking at posture, I'll say, well, one of the big rocks, quick giveaways you can see sometimes, if a person is standing with an anteriorly tilted pelvis and an arched lower back. So if, again, you have a big lordosis in your back and your pelvis is tipped forward such that if it was a bowl, the water or whatever liquid was in it would be running out the front. Well, if that's happening, the anteriorly tilted pelvis will take those ischial tuberosities from which the hamstrings originate, otherwise known as the sit bones, and pull them up and away from their distal attachments or insertions down below the knee. So what this does is it preloads the hamstring, so it's on pre-stretch. So now, if we're swinging the leg forward, the hamstring actually has less range or less muscular extensibility to go as far, because it's being essentially being pulled backwards by that tilted pelvis. So I might look at that, and then I might say, well, is that posture a product of an antagonistic muscle issue? So this could be the case where, you know, we have a person who maybe does a lot of sitting. Let's say you do office work or you're a driver, and maybe the hip flexor muscles get really tight, truly adaptively shortened. Well, what can then happen is those tight, in quotations, hip flexors can be the driver that's pulling the pelvis into the anterior tilt. And so we don't really need to stretch the hamstrings in this case, but we might stretch out the hip flexors and see if that provides a leveling or a normalizing effect at the pelvis. But interestingly enough, it's not always that simple. I'll see a lot of people who have a very lordotic posture, but they're not tight in their hip flexors when you test them, put them on the table, do a Thomas test or other types of assessments. What I will see instead is this this next thing, they just like that position. They're biased towards that position. So this gets into some of the great models that are out there now, and I'm using some of these to create my own models and integrate, but I want to give certainly credit to Bill Hartman and his work on expansion and compression and infrasternal angles and all the things that go with that. Well, a lot of times a person who is, let's say, very, compression dominant, and they're, very oriented, shall we say, to be in extension and use that lordotic position to generate power from. Well, if that's the case, it's not so much that their body has to be locked in that position. It just prefers to use it. And so in that case, what we might do is we might start saying, well, let's see if we can pull you back a little bit more towards the midline so that you can access some of the expansion properties. And that's where I'll go to pattern. And where I like to go is, if we're dealing with athletes in, let's say, locomotion and weight bearing, I like to use gait. And I think the gait cycle lines up really well with these types of things. And so a lot of times when you look at propulsion, that's what we call a part of late stance or terminal stance. And obviously we've got the pressure out there on the forefeet, and we're about to deliver force or generate it. Well, we want to get back into early stance where we can have more acceptance and absorption of force to allow for, again, kind of normalizing how the musculoskeletal system works. So we're not going all the way back to that point of like, we've got an overload somewhere. It's in the hamstring, for example. So that's kind of how I'll look at it. And I'll look at these patterns. So I'll put somebody in a lunge pattern or a split stance squat, and we can explore the triplanar nature of that movement. So this is probably getting a little bit deep in the voodoo talk, but you know, I can help a person understand, first of all, you know, what the rear foot or rear foot and midfoot are versus the forefoot. That's pretty basic. And then what early stance looks like and where those loads go, but also what's happening in the body. And that's typically a way that someone can more easily go down or descend in that split stance squat position as well as others. And so we'll start working on that. And I say, well, gosh, you know, it is three planes. And so next up would be, let's take a look at frontal plane motion. So that forward backward was sagittal plane. Now frontal plane, that's the side to side movement that we have in the body. And there is a subtle shift towards the inside edge when you descend. So I've get them practicing and feeling that. And then ultimately there's also the rotation that's involved. So we have transverse plane movement, and we want to wind into the position that we're, you know, the joints are designed to drive that, and the fascia winds up. And so with a split stance, you're turning towards the open side. And again, that's subtle. It varies from person to person based on body type, lever lengths, and other things. But if I can get somebody tuning into, oh, okay, well, I am not a robot. And when I do that movement, I want to sense and sort of optimize the amount of load distribution front to back, side to side, and rotation. And so all of a sudden, now we start using the foot as the tripod that it is. And so we say, well, we've got the heel as the rear portion of the tripod, and then you've got your metatarsal heads, or in other words, outside ball, inside ball. And force when you descend will drive from rear outside to forward inside. And so, you know, we almost create like an awareness of, again, in the split stance for this example, or walking gait, where we want to have that initial contact or loading, rearward and lateral. And then as we get towards the end of the cycle and we're having, you know, propulsion or toe off, well, now we're coming off, you know, inside forward or that big toe ball. So it's a really interesting way of looking at, can we identify posture, position, and then pattern issues, maybe? We can call them deficiencies if we want. And then just, can we optimize? So then we can start incorporating, well, where do we put load on the body? Do we want to steer the load more towards, let's say, being upright and backwards because that's where the person is struggling, or more towards, you know, that forward medial loading? So you can, how you hold a weight, as in holding a kettlebell in the hand, the front hand opposite the foot that's forward, you know, that's going to help us with getting onto that ball of the foot. Whereas if we hold the weight on the same side, otherwise known as ipsilateral hold, that's going to help us with the other position. So again, a lot of ways to tweak these things. And then we can start incorporating breathing and isometric holds and pulsatile movement, because the whole goal with any of this is to, you know, get function and optimize it for each person. And that leads to pain-free performance. Well, how that happens is in making sure that we don't have too many hitches in the old giddy-up. And then this topic kind of evolved a little further because I was working with a guy, another client in a Zoom session across the screen, and he had some knee pain, anterior knee pain. It was actually suprapatellar or oriented in his quadricep tendon. And so first of all, we, you know, listened to the pain pattern and the symptoms and determined, well, yeah, you probably have some form of what's known as quadriceps tendinopathy. Once we did that, we knew the what. Well, what about the why? And so in this guy's case, we ended up having to take a look at how he did a number of movements, and as well as his running gait. And what we discovered was, well, here's a guy who actually has a wide infrasternal angle. He is very compression or propulsion oriented. He tends to drive off the ball of the foot, and he wants to get there quickly. So he was actually not accessing any of his, or almost any of his ability to absorb and expand and manage force. He was good at producing force, but not so good at handling it. And so in his running stride, he's using quite a bit of 4 foot loaded position and knee bend and accepting force very isometrically when it wasn't necessary for the type of distance running that he was doing. So, you know, we kind of looked at that, like, oh, we don't need to make major changes here. We just got to tune your body up so that we can restore your access to a little more of the variability. Because you're really strong on one end, we just need to get you a bit more of the other. And you don't try to turn a person into something that they're not. We just try to turn them into the best version of themselves, again, for their body type, for the sport that they're doing. So these were fun questions for me because it really pushes me to back out and think globally. And again, there's never anything wrong when a person has an issue to say, well, you know, maybe you should possibly rest it temporarily or use ice, especially if it's acute or traumatic. You know, you're not going to go wrong there necessarily, but ultimately we've got to start rebuilding. And sometimes the rebuilding goes beyond just looking at the target tissue. And for example, hey, let's only stretch hamstrings, or, you know, let's only do knee extensions or something in the case of that last example. But enough said on that. I really appreciate, you know, listeners and clients for keeping me on my toes at learning and growing, and hopefully helping them as well. Now let's get into one more question before we move on. And this is the one that happens. It happens a lot, but it especially happens a lot at this time of the year, as in, you know, starting a new year, New Year's resolutions, fitness goals, equipment acquisitions, and it's this: choosing a cardio machine. So many people will say, hey, I want an indoor cardio machine for my home gym space, my workout space. I don't have a ton of space or an unlimited budget, so I've got to pick one. And what's the one that you recommend for me? And that's an interesting process because one of my goals in helping people set up home gyms, and that I do have a service that I provide, and it's consultative. Well, we never want to waste people's money. So when you're spending other people's money, it's important that value comes into play. We need to get something that's going to work for them, that they like, that is of reasonable quality, but you know doesn't break the bank as well. So I start thinking all along those lines, and we ask questions. So now you've got some choices, and I think I'll name some of the major categories. Probably not every one of them, but what becomes obvious is you've got stationary bikes. And so that can take a few different levels. It can be a spin style bike or a Peloton style bike. It can be a trainer for an existing road bike or mountain bike with slick tires or on the rear that you have. Can be also an air bike. I think those are good categories in bikes. I'll probably leave rollers off, which is a very select group of mostly bike racers that like to use rollers from time to time. So we've got bikes, we've got trainers, we've got spin bikes, and we've got air bikes. Then you've got treadmills, and there are motorized treadmills and non-motorized treadmills. Kind of mention those in a moment, and then we go into, I think rowing machines are up there. They're excellent. And let's see, what else can I think of that's common? I'm probably not going to say a ski erg because, again, that's a little more specialized. And, you've got ellipticals. I knew there was something I was trying to think of. So let's just dive into those things, first of all. Now, if a person is a dedicated or avid runner, they might want to look at the treadmill. However, I would usually propose it this way. Get the treadmill if you live in a geographic region or a climate where you really have inclement weather for a significant portion of the year. It could be, it could be hurricane season, but probably it's winter that we're talking about. And if winter is exceptionally cold, icy, dark, those are good reasons to have a treadmill. It's not that you can't run outside. You can use lights and traction devices, and there's some benefits to doing that, but also there's a convenience of having the treadmill. So again, for the runner that's probably going to want to be indoors at least some of the year, or it's that type of runner that really enjoys like a controlled situation, controlled climate, maybe the ability to view or listen to programming while they're getting their training in, max efficiency if it's next to a few other pieces of equipment. All that's good. Now, I'm still a proponent for outside exercise and all the benefits of sunlight and oxygen and grounding and fellowship and whatever we can get. But let's just say there's your treadmill. Now, probably anything below $500 is junk. It's not going to work for running, and it barely works for walking. The motors are weak, and the construction is a little bit on the light side. But actually, these days, when you go up one more level and you're in that $500 to $1,000 range, you can find fairly serviceable treadmills that, again, that work fairly well. Now, the more you want to run, the faster you want to go in terms of pace or speed, and the more serious you are about workouts, the more money you'll spend to get higher quality. But you can get a very serviceable treadmill in that price range. But when you start to double that number and you're up around the $2,000 mark, you're starting to get into more performance options. Again, for the really serious person and also the person that has the budget. Now, interestingly enough, there are probably several classes of non-motorized treadmills. But the more recent ones are like the True Runner with the curved deck and the belt that looks like tank treads. Those really are unique. They're really interesting. I've had the opportunity to run on them for a while. Once you get them going, they give you the ability to have a very natural stride, and it actually doesn't rob you of that pushback mechanism that your kinetic chain kind of doesn't get on a motorized treadmill. So that's really nice. And also, they're really good for sprinting. So if you, you know, if you're the kind of runner who wants to do a lot of interval-based work and sprinting, maybe even on and off the treadmill, this could be a great investment. But it's expensive, of course, and it goes up again. I think the entry-level model now is around $4,000 and up. And again, I believe there are going to be several competing brands as patents evolve. But nonetheless, that's where you're at with treadmills. They do take up a big footprint. And so I only recommend treadmills for people that really think they're going to do a lot of walking and running on them. If you're not going to use them very often, there are better ways to spend your money and use your space. So then we go into the bikes. And I'd say right away that if a person lives in a climate and they're a runner, if they live in a climate where they can run outside most of the time, or maybe they don't tend to run every day anyway, and maybe you shouldn't, a bike's a great cross-training idea. That's alternative mode aerobic training. So now we can have this, you know, supplemental type of conditioning for a runner. So that's not a bad idea. But going into the bike, I'd say people that are, really into cycling, they consider themselves avid cyclists or racers. Most of those folks these days go with the trainers, the higher-end trainers, especially the ones that you can use with Zwift. And there are some competing brands now. But those allow you to use, quote-unquote, a real bike. And, you can really watch all your metrics, such as power, and have an interactive experience if you desire that with much of the programming. So that's really good. And it's a good investment for someone who's a racer or triathlete or someone who's going to spend a lot of time riding indoors. It's fair to say that riding indoors can be a little dull, depending on what you've got there for entertainment or mental focus. So that's an option. Now, for most of the rest of us, a good quality spin type bike, whether that's chain driven or belt driven, magnetic or other type of resistance, these things they're just getting better and better all the time. Sturdy construction, don't take up much space, run quietly, last a long time. Minimal service needs. So it's a good investment if you're the kind of person that says, I might jump on the bike here and there for a warm-up or a cool-down or, a short ride, possibly some intervals or some on-offers, which I'm really fond of in the wintertime. Say, ride the bike for 5 minutes, then jump off, do a circuit of exercises. This is great stuff. And I like the price point. Again, you can get some really good quality, $250, $300, believe it or not, and going up, of course, for extra features. So that's the spin type bikes. And obviously the Peloton bike, comes with the potential for, lots of other programming. And it's a very nice bike at a much higher price point. It's just, what appeals to you. But the air bikes, there's several variations of them. The original one was the old Schwinn Airdyne. I still happen to have one that's in good service across the hall from me. But these air bikes are really not the greatest for a lot of long duration steady state riding. You can sit on it and work the arms and legs, and yeah, it's full body, that's for sure. But I don't know. It seems like most people that want to ride for a while, they want to ride a bikey bike. And so that's kind of what I would say there. Now, however, for full body interval training, I think they're probably the best choice. They're awesome because you can do all sorts of intervals, and that wind resistance is it's inertial. It's great. And it's almost a natural reciprocal movement pattern in the body. So I like an air bike for that. And you kind of have to ask yourself, well, am I more of, kind of like a circuit training, high intensity interval gym rat kind of person, get the air bike. If you're like, I like cycling and I'm more dedicated to cardio, get the spin bike. So that's how I put that forth. Now, if we go to rowers or rowing machines, like the Concept 2 and all of its competitors, That's very similar to the air bike, in my opinion, in that it is a full body, potentially aerobic exercise, although it has some strength components or benefits as well. And so it's almost a toss-up. You know, I don't think you need all of these things unless you're building a dream gym, but if you like the interval training that you get off of the air bike, go with the air bike. But if you like that rowing motion, that rowing feeling, or if you happen to do any type of rowing, whether that's in a fishing capacity or competitively, you know, by all means, you're gonna want the rower. But I would say the same thing. Rowing is it actually works better with higher intensity efforts, you know, and so what's your 500, what's your 1,000, things like that, or doing, you know, various types of intervals, whether they're time or distance based, then it is just get on and row for an hour. Now, again, there will be people that are going to do that, but what I try to do when I'm doing an interview with someone is really find out, well, what kind of training do you typically see yourself doing? How often? Again, what's your budget? What's your space? But then also, what do you really love? And so if somebody's like, well, you know, I thought about getting a rower, but I've struggled for most of my life with chronic lower back problems. I'm like, well, you know, there's a way to use rowing that's safe for your back and it can strengthen your back as well as you can strengthen your back in other means to use the rower. But honestly, for people with back issues, I usually steer them more towards, let's say, the air bike or the other type of bike than the rower. So again, we always want to be thinking about those things. And that comes up to the elliptical machine. And, you know, it's last in my rotation here probably because of my bias. You know, I just don't love the things. I've used maybe not hundreds of them, but I've used dozens of them in different circumstances. And I've never found one that actually felt like it was biomechanically correct for a human, you know, at least this one. You know, it just never fit me. It always felt herky-jerky, achy-breaky when I was using the thing. Now, that being said, there are people that love them because it's essentially no impact or very low. You can, you know, especially if you use the arms, most elliptical machines have the arm feature. You're getting a full body exercise. And so where they come in handy is, I think, whenever we have a person who feels okay, doesn't mind using it, but maybe you have an orthopedic issue where you do have some limitations that you have to observe and respect. And here's a great way to get some, probably not so much intervals in my opinion, but some good steady state work, low to moderate intensity, and supplement training, help recovery without beating yourself up. So that, there's a place for these things. And I do recommend them for some clients, even if I don't like them. You know, I don't think it's important to never be that narrow-minded that, you know, we don't see how others can be different from ourselves. So those are kind of those four categories that I like to look at, treadmills, bikes, rowers, and ellipticals. And you essentially want to narrow things down to the point where you know, oh gosh, this is the thing that I'm really going to use, so it's going to amortize well, I'm going to get my money's worth out of it. You know, there are some budget options and some decent price points, but there's always that old adage, you know, buy the best and cry once, and there's something to be said for quality up to a point, beyond which there are diminishing returns when you look at any of this equipment. The most expensive ones probably just have more bells and whistles and program features that honestly most of us don't use, but good to know about that. So there's some input on choosing a cardio machine because, you know, many folks have been asking me about it. And then if I go talk about the great TLA t-shirt giveaway that's coming up, what we're going to do is I'm going to give away a t-shirt of your choice to the person who manages to write the most interesting or best, in my opinion, review of this podcast. And so wherever you listen to the podcast, whether that's on Stitcher or Google, or more people actually based on the stats are on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. But again, wherever you're getting this, if you can leave a rating and review, hopefully it's 5 stars, that is certainly much appreciated. But the one that also kind of nails the ethos and the character of what we're doing here can pick from any of the cool shirts that we have available. I'll announce that on a later show, and we'll send it out to you. So, first of all, we've got the TLA Hard to Kill men's fitted short sleeve tee, and that's a cool one. It's got the small Hard to Kill logo over the side of the chest, and then it's got our Lifetime Athlete logo on the back. Well, that one, you know, Hard to Kill, it's been a term that's been used in movies and books for quite a while. But I started using this a number of years ago because it really occurred to me that, gosh, the people who are healthy and who are athletic and they're doing most of the things right, there is no perfect, but they're doing this well, they actually are harder to kill. They have stronger immune systems, and they just tend to be more versatile and durable human beasts, terms that I like to use a lot. And so that's where I went with this whole idea of hard to kill. You know, you're hard to kill both on the playing field in sports when, you know, you're optimally healthy and conditioned and trained, but also that carries over into everything in life. You know, whether you're talking about relationships or work performance or life satisfaction. So hard to kill, that might be a great shirt for you. Next up, we've got a couple of our Animal Fit shirts, and Animal Fit is my book. It's all about recognizing and understanding your body type, your unique gifts, your traits, your inner beast. And so you unleash your inner beast and you unlock your athletic potential with Animal Fit. That's the subtitle. And we've got that in a baseball tee, which is kind of cool. It's an old style shirt that I really like, as well as a more modern women's racer back tank. And Animal Fit is, it's really one of the foundations that I use here at TLA to try to really optimize coaching and performance for every person. Because when you really start to dial in and appreciate and know what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are as well, and then how to bias training to get the performance that you're looking for, it's a game changer. It's quite amazing. Some of these shirts are just amazing in the color options that they provide as well. I'm just enjoying looking through the shop page on the website currently and seeing these things. We've got the TLA Athlete for Life V-neck tee. You know, and the V-neck is a fashion statement, but where I go with that is athlete for life to me really means that a person is committed to being and staying athletic as a rite of passage as a human, first of all, but also you want athletic blood vessels and athletic neurons and athletic reproductive function, all those things. And so it's not just about being good at sports or fit or anything like that. Those things are important, but it's also being athletic and resilient and robust of body, mind, and spirit. So athlete for life. Let's see, what else do we got? We've got a couple of other items that aren't t-shirts. You know, there are some hats and hoodies that are available, but I'm sticking with t-shirts for this giveaway. A quick sip here of my broth. Yeah, I can feel the health pouring through me at this moment. I've also got a women's cut t-shirt in Hard to Kill, a slightly different placement of the logo there. And that's actually been fairly popular with our Training Tribe members. Some of the local ones have that shirt, and they like the cut and the performance that they get out of it. Now, the next shirt is a long sleeve tee. It's a unisex model, and on the front of the shirt, it says, "On the playing field and in the game of life." Of course, it says Hard to Kill on the back. I love the way that message is delivered, and that's a sharp-looking shirt as well. One of my long-term favorites, in fact, one of the guys that asked these questions, who was in that masterclass, was wearing this shirt the other day when we had the conversation. It's a unisex short-sleeve tee, jersey fabric, but it says on the front, die late, die healthy, die fast. And I like that, because what that really says to me is, when we all leave this journey, it's going to be late in the journey because we've had a long one. Quote unquote, die healthy. Wouldn't that be great if we all dropped dead in our sleep when the time finally came? But in other words, statistically, if we do a lot of the things that we talk about, almost ad nauseum here at the Lifetime Athlete, we'll stay healthy till near the end. And that's really the great goal I have for certainly myself and everyone else. And you know, you can't control these things, but you can sure try. And then dying fast basically means that when you do go, it's not a protracted journey in an institution from chronic illness, which is really, it's nothing that anyone deserves and we want for no one, but it is a part of Western or modern life with some of the lifestyle factors and diet driving these things. And we want to avoid that. So die late, die healthy, die fast. It's a strong message and one that I take seriously. You've also got the Running Demons short sleeve tee. So that Running Demons club or subgroup in the training tribe is coaching that I provide for runners. And it's a cool shirt. It's a fitted tee, men's and women's, and it has the runner logo on the front with the little devil horns, which is kind of cool. And then on the back says Lifetime Athletes. That's really a nifty shirt. It's fun. And then when I go now, say I'm on the back page, just got a couple more shirts I like talking about. So here's one. It's got the infamous red circle with the line drawn through it on the front. And it says, weak, slow, stiff, and fragile. And those are the absolute opposite things of what we want to be as Lifetime Athletes. And on the back, it says, strong, fast, agile, and durable. That's what you are when you do these things. I salute you. We've got another shirt that really spun out of our training tribe because it was one of our training tribe members. I've talked about this on the show before, but he was referencing the programming that we do. And what this shirt says on the front is, this shirt works. However, the R is crossed out because that's the way the guy said it. So it does work. And all the programming that we do and just that balanced approach of strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance based on a platform of lifelong health, it is magnificent. Got another version of Hard to Kill, which is big letters, HTK, and that's what we all deserve to be. And I've got two more. There's a sweatshirt, the old No Days Off. I just explained that philosophy recently in the I think I did it here on the pod, as well as in a simulcast or put out in a blog article. And No Days Off really to me doesn't mean going crazy, but it means staying consistent. And we want to have a lot of steady, easy days. And as we get older and become, true lifetime athletes, getting through that lifespan, that consistency is really important. You just can't get away with too many days off because they put you in the hole. And then last but not least, we've got a training tribe. It's the Heavy Cotton Champion shirt, which is the training tribe logo shirt, big T2 with training tribe on the front. That's a cool one too. And even if you're not a member, you might like that shirt. And who knows, maybe you'd want to become a member just because you're so inspired if you got a free training tribe shirt. So anyway, what's going to happen is, again, rate and review, do what you can to support this endeavor. I appreciate you for doing it. And then I will select what I think is the best one and announce it in an upcoming show. And we'll make sure we get that shirt to you. So a bit of a ramble today. A lot of fun for me just to talk about things I'm passionate about, whether it's, where we came up with the names for these t-shirts or some of the deeper intricacies of movement analysis and coaching. I always appreciate it. So until next time, Coach Jay-Z getting ready to sign off here from the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. And, if you want to support the show, you can go to lifetimeathlete.com, scroll down on that right sidebar and make a donation. It's just like Patreon, except I got rid of them as the middleman. It's just directly through our secure server. And, if you need coaching, hit the coaching menu item. You can learn about the things that I do. That's one-on-one consultations. It's coaching via subscription. It's home gym setup, kind of and design service there, as well as training program development. Check it out. And I guess that's enough for today. Really appreciate you guys. Hope you have a fantastic one. Talk to you soon.